Hello and welcome to I Wish I Knew That About Songwriting, the show that brings you tips, tricks and techniques that we wish we knew as young songwriters. We're going to focus on interviews, resources and subjects that you will find useful and you can use them today. Thank you so much for listening and welcome to the show. Welcome to another episode of I Wish I Knew That About Songwriting. We have a special guest today and I'll do a little bit of an intro just because I had such a whirlwind but great introduction to this human being. And I was in Australia, as you do, whatever possessed me to go out there to Sydney, ended up meeting some incredible producers and songwriters. And in between this day off, someone said, hey, I've got a friend. He's interested in meeting you. He's keen to come on the podcast. Do you want to meet him? So here I am at this coffee shop and I'm going to take you through the experience in my mind of meeting James. And I want to do that through the kind of pleasure that I had. So welcome to the show, James Guido. How are you doing, my man?
Doing very well. Thank you for having me. What an introduction. Wow.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. You deserve it. I think because there were so many touch points, like when we met, I thought, oh, wow, I really want to write a song. Okay, let's do this. We have like 4 hours. But really, as soon as we started talking, I was like, no, hold on. This guy has so much to share. Let's just take the time to learn from one another. So how would you like people to be introduced to you? What do you want to tell people about yourself in terms of what you do, where you are? Start with some basics, if you don't mind.
I suppose the quickest answer is I'm a producer and songwriter. I think primarily a producer and more so in recent years a songwriter. And I work with various artists, like most producers and songwriters in Australia. And I do Zoom sessions and things like that to get out overseas and I guess try and evolve my global outreach. But at the forefront of it, it's just production and songwriting. It's fairly basic, I suppose.
I love it. That's the way you said it. But I was really interested in your perspectives on particularly the Australian industry. So I'm going to dive you on the deep end on it. We will get into some technical songwriting stuff later. But you talked about independent artists propping up major labels in Australia. I'd love to hear that in full, please.
Yeah, we had such a great chat that day and we definitely talked about a lot of things. And I think the key takeaway from that, and you were really interested in this, but it's just on an economic level how the industry is working, or at least my view on it, is that there are a lot of independent artists who are essentially funding their way through the industry. They're not making thousands and thousands of dollars on streams or shows because these things aren't paying them a lot of money. And so, you know, they're working part-time jobs to fund their art and fund their careers. And I think what is interesting is obviously that the label-based artists, I mean, they're still usually working a part-time job to pay for their career on top of having their label, which to us is fairly normal. But I think, we talked about it. You seemed very shocked. And a lot of my US friends are the same. They're just like, what? What's going on? Like, they should be focusing on their art. But I think in terms of getting back to the question was that the independent artists are floating the industry. It's like, well, not a lot of their work can be done on spec. So they're having to pay in advance, whereas a lot of the label acts are going and writing thousands of songs and then coming back later and negotiating their fees and things afterwards. And so a lot of, you know, the people building live shows or producing songs and recording songs and all of the creative work that needs to be done and paid for is really floated by the independent artist. I mean, I feel like a lot of people would be a little bit hesitant in having me say that, but honestly, I think that's genuinely what's happening here. And I'd like to see a shift. I don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon, but you know, that's the small short story of the economics of the industry here.
Yeah, and it was a little bit shocking. I think it wasn't completely unheard of because there is that idea that you fund your art through part-time work. That's what people listening to the show would be doing for sure. A lot of the people I even met in Australia, that was their reality. But it's a little bit scary that even the top, the aspirational class, if you will, of the industry, even in Australia, you might well find them in your local bakery, coffee shop or bank. That seems to be the place where we find them. But I want to get a bit more into your story. We talk a lot about, on this show, building relationships. This is what I'm doing right now, okay? So really interested in meeting you. I ended up learning a lot from you personally. And then that's the extension of, hey, would you mind talking to people that love this kind of thing? But how did you get started? I want to hear about you sending that first email that we talked about, if you remember that.
Yeah. So I guess the first thing was that I was originally making, I mean, are you asking in terms of how I started making music and started writing as a professional or?
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess the easy answer for that is I was, you know, just like any person, just making music in my bedroom. I wanted to be a producer like Skrillex. I'd been playing guitar for years and I wasn't too fond on the idea of being in a band because I wanted creative control and all of these things. And there were too many cooks in the kitchen. And I'd sort of done that through high school. And then when I left and first went to uni, I was studying another degree, which was an engineering degree. And so I needed a creative outlet. I'd sort of, I guess in a way, actually thinking back, I felt a little bit deflated because I'd always wanted to do music. I didn't really in myself want to be an engineer, but it was the option that was given to me and the option that I could take at the time. And I always thought, oh, I can't have a career in music. It's not feasible. It's not going to work out. And all these horror stories you hear, I think a lot of people would resonate with that. And so I went and studied a degree that was in a lane that I'd sort of set myself up to go down throughout high school because I was always interested in it. And I actually, after leaving school, I didn't play guitar for nearly a year after that. And I only actually started playing guitar again because I got a part-time job teaching guitar. And I was producing music on the side because I just suddenly realized, oh, why would I want to play guitar when I can sit here and play thousands of different instruments and tweak them endlessly until I fall into some haze? and so... what happened from then was I just started discovering dance music, which I will admit, dance and pop music, I was so strongly against that when, as a guitarist, as most guitarists would be. And I just fell in love with it and the idea of making dance music and the sounds that I guess I was hearing through Skrillex. And I didn't really have too much, I guess, insider knowledge or background knowledge or depth of the genre at the time. I just heard Skrillex because it was a popular name. And I was like, wow, these sounds are incredible. How do I do this? And that's sort of what got me into production, I suppose. After about 2 or 3 years, I was making club music and I started to DJ because that seemed like a really cool thing to do. And I was working with a manager who was actually on the other side of the country in Perth. And he was absolutely amazing and put me in touch with some awesome people in the US who I got to write with and work with while I was out there. And I wasn't actually until I stepped onto this flight that I realized, oh, I'm not flying here because I want to be an awesome engineer and there's all these amazing engineering things going on. I'm actually flying here because the thing that I'm doing on the side when I leave uni till 2 o'clock in the morning is doing something. People are liking what I'm doing. And so that's sort of the initial spark, I guess, and or the catalyst for moving into this professionally. And then I guess one of the first things that happened then, I mean, one of my favorite books is The Alchemist. And it's one of the key takings from that was for me was when you find something that you really are looking to do and really, really love to do, everything will conspire to help you initially. And then a lot of things fell into place that sort of allowed it to progress. I moved degrees. I changed to a music degree. And while I don't know if that's really, in my opinion, something that I'd tell a lot of people to do, I think that it's definitely something that allowed me time to process, okay, I needed 2 years to just go, I'm not going to be an engineer anymore. I'm abandoning this whole idea. I'm going to go and be a musician and whatever that is. And I thought the only career path was to be a music teacher because especially here, there's no one telling you, oh, you can actually make records and people will listen to them and you can sit in a studio every day and create. And it's actually a viable career path. No one ever tells you that here. And I'm not sure. I mean, I'm sure there are similar stories elsewhere. But again, I think that also reflects on the size of the industry and the cash flow in the industry, which we talked a lot about when we caught up. Anyway, I was writing a bunch of pop music, and I collaborated with people at uni, and I started to actually write, I guess, pop songs where they had vocals, because a lot of the music I'd worked on beforehand was instrumental. It was just like crazy bass music, obviously lots of drums and sonic stuff happening. And I put a song up that I'd written by myself, and it was the first song I'd ever really sung onto this local radio station's website, and an A&R from a label reached out. And that was kind of, I suppose, my first toes into the pool of, oh, okay, now this person is putting me in sessions with artists that they're coming across to produce their music. And I guess from there, it was sort of it. It was, you know, every week or 2 weeks at the start, I was in a new session with someone else. And I'll be honest, I didn't really write the best music in the world, but I was still learning, and I had been given an opportunity that I never expected. And I just thought, wow, I really need to double down and understand this, because I'm having the absolute time of my life making this music. And after I finished my degree, I was working part-time at a fashion company called H&M. Yep. And I was producing music in my parents' garage. I mean, I converted the garage into a studio. It was nearly 2 hours south of Sydney. And funnily enough, at some point, I just kept working. And then artists were driving, you know, like flying up from Melbourne, which is a 2 hour flight, or like an 8 hour drive, and then catching the train down to come and work with me. And I thought, well, maybe it's time to move into the city, I guess. And I mean, by international standards, Sydney is not huge, and there's not that many people, but it was a lot closer. I guess from there, I had my own studio. I could write with people every single day. I managed to leave my part-time job because I was working on all these songs and all these cuts were coming out. And obviously I was, you know, generating an income from producing and mixing people's songs that I was co-writing as well. And that's kind of what led me to here and led to us meeting, obviously through our mutual friends who do similar things.
Really well done as well. That's such a great navigation of everything I hope people would hear, and a few things I didn't know. And as you said, not suggesting people completely give up what they're doing. And often it will be a case of having to do something else on the side. There's other careers, but also backing yourself, turning up. And you said at the start that you were a producer turned songwriter. I'd love to know where and how you learned to write songs.
That's a really good question. And I actually didn't talk about that. The reason why I started writing lyrics, and I could not sing to save myself, but I had these beats, and I wouldn't class myself as someone who's fantastic at networking, if you like, or reaching out to people to find collaborators. And especially then, because I didn't really know anyone. I lived far away from the city. I wasn't within any circle of creatives. My only connection were people who went to uni, and a lot of them were just focused on being virtuosos and they're, you know, at singing or playing guitar or whatever. They weren't focused on actually being an artist. And so it was hard for me to find people to work with. So what actually happened was I bought a microphone and needed vocal samples that were original so I didn't get sued and I could upload my songs to SoundCloud. This was before Spotify was really in the forefront of my mind, but I was putting everything on SoundCloud and I needed to sing them myself. So I had this this free auto-tune plugin, which I can't tell you how many hours I spent trying to make it sound good, but that's essentially how that's essentially how I started writing songs, was because I needed original samples over my music to release, you know, to Spotify or SoundCloud without it coming down.
Crazy. So it was out of necessity that you had to learn to do that. And there's a lot, again, that, not that you've glazed over it, but there's so much that you've been through in terms of songwriting. Like, where do you think you learned to even write songs? Because yeah, there's singing and there's learning to auto-tune. Those are almost technical things you had to learn, but where did the ability to even write melodies come from?
That's a really good question. I think in terms of lyrics, and this might sound really silly to say, but does anyone actually know what they're doing? I think my opinion is that we all just have taste. We all just have this taste of what we like, and And if we're artists and we're looking to create, we all have this emotional understanding or perception or perspective of what we're viewing. And I think where that side of it came in, obviously, you know, songwriting split into lyrics and melody as a two copyrights. So if we look at them separately, I think lyrically, for me, I go, how can I mean, now as a co-writer, I spend most of my time executing other people's ideas and trying to, you know, tell someone else's story. Is that how do I observe this in a romantic way that really makes something be felt? And I think about all of the actual senses that are involved in a feeling. And I had an artist in here last week, and we were talking about something that had been going on. And I was like, what did that feel like? She was like, oh, it made me feel, you know, sad. And I was like, but what did sad feel like? You know, like what is that and why? And then actually, I guess, breaking things down on a psychological level and having an understanding before capturing it into a metaphor or capturing it into a line. And I think, I mean, I feel like a lot of people, you know, enjoy that because it feels like therapy in a way. It's like, okay, I can write these lyrics down and actually understand what I'm going through from a different perspective and break it down in a way that maybe I haven't. And that's my approach to lyrics. But in terms of melodies, it's quite interesting. I sort of play some chords and I feel like some people listening would be laughing. I literally just put on a voice memo and start singing some melodies into it. And usually I come up with a verse, a pre-chorus and a chorus. And somehow that just happens to be the three melodies that make up the whole song. And that's it. I don't know how or why.
That's perfect. No, that is not embarrassing. That is perfect. That's exactly what I talk about and exactly what I do with people. It's called ABC, okay. I call it. So verse, pre, chorus.
Yeah.
Literally that.
Recycle the parts.
Relying on that creative subconscious. Yeah, recycle the parts. Then you develop those B melodies from the contrast and all the melodics we talk about. But yeah, it's perfect. And thank you for offering that. Like, you didn't know that we weren't going to come down and be like, oh my God, you don't know that.
Yeah.
No, that is exactly what we want to talk about. It's like, you've got to start creatively. I liked your approach to lyrics as well, because it is that. And also working with artists, right? And getting them to come to how they actually feel. That's similar to what I work with on people, is free writing, and then building from that free writing, go, well, what exactly is that emotion you talk about? And you find you have that kind of top of the consciousness, middle and subconscious. So we start to pull that up and be able to see that. So I'm going to hit you with, I won't hit you with the main question yet,
okay,
because that's, I like to put that towards the end. But as we're on songs, what in your opinion is the difference between a good song and a great song?
A good song and a great song. I think that's the subjective part. So what I find is a great song, and there are so many people who will battle me on this, and this is why it's subjective, is that for me, a great song is something that manages to capture all of the emotion and fit it within the parameters of these cookie cutter melodies. Like, we're not going to step outside of this pattern, because that's something that infuriates me, unless it's done intentionally. And I think someone who is fantastic at that and fantastic at borrowing chords from different keys and putting them in the right place or changing the rhyme scheme, John Mayer. I don't know if many people will argue with that.
We just pray to that man on the show, like, it's all good.
He is ridiculous in terms of songwriting. And I think that there's a little moment that's, I wouldn't say happened, but happening still with JP Sachs and Julia Michaels style songwriting, where the lines seem to truncate towards the end of the melody and then fit in words that you wouldn't expect, but leave you in some way. It's a careful placement of resolution. So if that's rhythmic or melodic resolution, there's a way that they control how you feel comfortable with the ending of the line to create tension. That's really interesting to me. I think that, again, a great song is just something that captures something that I've personally felt, or paints me a picture of something in a way that is so feeling and emotional based that I can actually empathize with it. That is it for me. That's a fantastic song, or paints the emotion vividly for me. That's it.
Beautiful. Again, a really, really elaborate answers. I'm loving these. And that they're accessible, because I'm aware there's people listening of different stages of songwriting, Often people come back towards the end of their life, listen to the show and go like, oh, yeah, songwriting's awesome. So thank you for explaining that in a way that's tangible. And
we love that word.
I wanted to ask...
Tangible.
Yeah, I had that in my notes. Yeah, I was like, tangible. It's a great word. Talking about money. Now, but I think one thing I wanted to pull you up on, when you said it, it reminded me of when you had your first opportunities as a writer. We talked about this idea of the kind of, it's called like the lap of honor. Sometimes when you have a song or something comes out, you're given all these opportunities. But you talked about it like the analogy of being in a designer, like Gucci fashion store, and not necessarily having the ability to convert on those opportunities. Yeah. So you talked about the need for skill. Do you remember
that? Yeah, it actually ties in with something that happened. So my whole opinion, thinking about this again, I actually remember what we were talking about, but my whole opinion on this is that, as I said earlier, I'm not a great person at networking or climbing through any means of career development that way. I think that my main goal and focus has always been, how do I become the best at my craft? And I think that there's this classic quote, which is, luck is the intersection of opportunity and preparation. And my thinking is, when I am prepared, people will throw me the opportunities. My whole aim is to go, how do I be so good at this and elevate this session or this person to a point where they go and tell someone, oh, this person did this, how amazing is this? I'm so impressed with this work. Opportunities will come. And I think that I actually learned that the absolute hardest way once, and it was my first ever co-write, and it was at a major publisher, and I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. I absolutely bombed. And it was actually with one of the most amazing songwriters. I actually am like, I can't believe that I tanked this so bad. And it was my first session. And I just think, I feel so sorry for her. So awful. And that's an example of something where I was, I guess, reflecting on that, thinking, I really need to be in this situation where I am trying to be the best in the room or so qualified to be here that there's no question as to why everyone's sitting in the room. We're all here to make art. No one's trying to prove themselves. And it just creates, in a way, a respect amongst everyone that is safe in some odd way. I feel like everyone is comfortable when they all feel respected in the room and able to express ideas. And I think that not because this person did anything that was rude or nasty or anything. I just felt so insecure because I felt so underprepared for that session. That really, you know, after leaving is when I reflected on this. It's like, I need to just go and write 600 songs. Like, you know, 100's a lot. That's 2 a week. But how do I do 600 songs? And every time I have, every time I have a moment where I go, man, I gotta really work on this. I'll just go and write so many songs, like so many songs, and eventually it'll just fall out of practice, or you find yourself using the same things. You just go, cool, I'm gonna write 50 songs without including that now, you know, and doing the reps. I guess that was my main thing. But again, coming back to the Gucci store. Is feeling like, okay, you know, rocking up to Gucci and going, yeah, I can shop here. There's that confidence that I was just touching on. It's like you can walk into a session and feel nervous. And I think that that's normal. I think it's good to be a little nervous because it means you actually care. But knowing, you know what, I have the skill set to back up this, and we're going to come out with an awesome song. Whether we finish it or not is it completely out of my control. But I'm not just browsing in the Gucci store. I'm here to actually compete, or, you know, I don't think that's the right word for it, but to show up and
convert, isn't it? We talked
about. Yeah, convert. I think that's exactly it. It's to rock up and we're actually going to achieve something today. And people respect that because, and again, if we're going to come back to the economics of this, there's some days where, you know, I'll be honest, I've had sessions with artists and we've tried to write things and we just have not come up with something. And for me, I feel awful about that because I know, you know, I'm lucky enough to be able to do this every single day, but I didn't have to take a day off my part-time job that I'm using to, you know, create music right. or pay my rent to come in and not get a song out of it. And I don't think any artist that I've ever worked with, they're all too lovely to ever say that, but I would hate that idea that this person has just sacrificed a day of income to come in and I haven't even been able to get a song with them. Like, it's just awful to me. And it's not because anyone's not talented or anything. So sometimes we just, you know, you have an off day or just this, the creative energy is not flowing. And yeah, I think being able to show up every day is really important, but obviously we're not going to be able to do that every day.
No, I was going to say, it's not, for me, it's probably actually a positive thing that you've experienced that, because that indicates that you've done it enough, that you're doing it. Like you said, you hire out the seventh day of the week of your studio to stop yourself coming in 7 days
yeah.
a week, right? And I think when you're coming up against those issues and you've done so many sessions, or you're putting yourself in so many sessions, to me, that's a really, really good sign of growth. It's a good sign of coming up against a new barrier. And you even talked about that when you're writing 50 songs or like 600, yeah. these crazy numbers, and just shows your obsession. I think that's what was an underlying thing. And you talk about maybe not being able to navigate, negotiate, and climb in terms of building relationships. But I think you can. I think you can, because from what I saw, it comes from that space of skill, and you know you have that. I think that's pretty clear. And what was cool, I think, just to talk about your sonics a little bit, when we were in your studio, which as you're in now, it's crazy, other side of the world, so strange, you had a really interesting, more of like a rocky take on pop and production.
Yeah, I think the description I had once was, it was an interesting blend of pop and indie, and it was just such a corporate description.
I was gonna say that's not it at all.
But yeah, I think you're right. And again, I think it comes down from the fact that I started playing power chords on my bed when I was 14 on my guitar and listening to Guns N' Roses on repeat. I can basically tell you every single lead line in the whole Appetite for Destruction album. Yep.
But that's so funny. That's not the guy that I met. I met a guy who's kind of like Metropolitan, Sydney coffee shop, North Shore, you know, like producer.
Yeah.
Like Great Tash as well, if you guys can't see. Good road bike as well. So it's these interesting things that make who you are. That's maybe not relevant. That's just me having fun. Because you crashed the day after, I think.
That afternoon.
I did actually have a question. I did have a question. You don't have to, again, mention specifics in terms of figures or people, but I'm really interested in what you can share about this project you've got coming up this summer and the risk you took to put that together, and maybe some of the things people can glean practically from doing so, if you don't mind.
100%. I think I've been working on a really large project, and it's been a lot of investment in time. And I think it's something that I never thought I'd be able to do, and it was an opportunity that came again. As I touched on this earlier, it just came out of the blue. I never ever expected to be working on something of this scale, and it just happened. I was in here cleaning the studio one day, just doing a casual vacuum.
I think
I'd been out the night before, and I was like, I'll just rock up, and you know, I won't do any work. I'll just clean. So it's all clean for my session on, it was a Sunday. It was before I was working every day. I was in here literally every day doing something, trying to take a step forward. And I got a phone call, and it was saying, hey, so-and-so needs you to track some vocals. And I thought, oh, okay. And I said, well, send them in. I'll be here for another hour and a half. And they're like, yeah, it's just a little thing. And so cool, send him in, I'll be here. So I finished cleaning, I think I ate some lunch, and then one of these artists that, I mean, I won't talk names just yet because it's not been talked about, but...
You can if you want, it's totally up to you.
But yeah, well, just in terms of the fact that it hasn't been announced what's going on, so I'll let them, explain that to the world when they're ready, but...
Yeah, I won't break it here on this podcast, it's called the internet, it's fine.
Walks in and I'm just going... I used to listen to you when I was a kid. Like, that's nuts to me. And I've never, to this day, haven't actually said it. I think it's going to be funny when I do. But yeah, so we tracked some vocals, and it was just literally, I think I can't stress this enough, how much of a funny sliding doors opportunity this was. And I think being prepared was the key. So what happened was, I got sent this track that had been written somewhere else, and they asked if I could track the vocals for one of the verses again. I said, yeah, sure. I was really nervous. Came in, they were here for 10 minutes. 10 minutes, maybe 12.
10 minutes.
I sent four takes over, and I got a text from the guy later, and he goes, hey, mate, thank you so much for today. You know, I really appreciate you doing that on short notice. I was like, no worries. He's like, I mean, I'll just speak freely. He goes, how much do I owe you? And I said, it was 10 minutes. You know, don't even worry about it. Like, just credit me if it comes out. And I sort of went home and I was like, I cannot believe that I didn't try to write with this person. And so I just sent a follow-up text. I was like, hey, mate, I actually listened through the stuff that you'd worked on. And to be completely honest and completely authentically, I knew it was something that I would do. It's exactly the sound that from some of the demos that I played you. And I thought, this is exactly up my alley. Why don't we do this? And I always have a playlist full of songs that I've written, and they, you know, there's one playlist with songs that are being finished or getting mixed. And then there's obviously the day one bounces that never got released, you know, the pitch tracks. And I was like, do you mind if I send some songs over? And he goes, yeah, absolutely. Just send them over. We'll see. Maybe we can work something out, you know, see if it's going to fit. So I did. And we ended up cutting one of the songs that was in there. He's like, hey, I actually love this song. I've never done this before and actually sung a song that someone else has written. Do you mind if we work on it? And yeah, we changed a bunch of things then in the end and created a sound for this project, but it's turned into essentially an album worth of material, and I've been working on it since July. So I think, and this is sort of the economics of the business that we talked about, is that a lot of the time these massive projects are being done on spec. So you're investing hundreds of hours and hoping to see a return, and that can be stressful. Now, obviously, I mean, a lot of people, this is a songwriting podcast, so a lot of people wouldn't necessarily be producing. So they're writing a lot of songs that they're just going to see publishing on, or, and, you know, who knows how long that's going to take to come through, you know, before you actually see some revenue from it. And I guess, I think we may have talked about this, that in the economics of it, the producer gets paid first, because then it gets mixed.
Yeah, the first link in the chain you talked about.
Yeah, in the whole chain. The producer gets paid, the mix engineer gets paid, the mastering engineer gets paid, and then, you know, the label gets paid, the marketing team gets paid, all of that. And realistically, unfortunately, the artist is usually the last person to get paid for the work. But it does come down to risk and who's taking the risk. So, you know, the producer is usually taking the risk first. They're working on the material, the songwriters as well. I think that's something that needs to change, though. Maybe that's something we can talk about later, is getting songwriters paid. Because I don't know how, just as a songwriter, especially here, again, I don't have that much experience internationally and how the economics of it's working over there. But here in Australia, I don't know how you could be a songwriter and really just make a living. It would be really tough.
No, it's not just you as well. I think you have this humble, but maybe too humble, appreciation of what you do understand about the industry. And me as a songwriter, like, I work as a songwriting coach as well. Yes, and I'm also working with people on spec. Yes, and I'm also like A&Ring projects on spec, because that's time, right? You're talking about skill and hours. And the way I've seen it is people being kind enough, producers, you know, when I'm in the room, provided I'm not physically producing, sharing that as if I was a producer. You know, that's the way I've seen that it can work as a writer, but that requires a lot of speculation.
Yeah, and I think that's something that came to my attention more so at the start of last year, end of 2021, was that here with the, I guess, the cash flow and the pool of money being so small, there's almost no market for being a songwriter, other than obviously your streams, which is not making as much as the recording income from publishing. I think it's a third. Someone may correct me on that. And so, you know, if it works that we're doing a session with a top liner and an artist and myself as producer, we're all writing. But if the song gets cut, I usually give the top liner an actual fee for their day at least. And I think that something you and I talked about was costs covered. You know, it costs you an hour of your time to get to the session, plus your fees to get there, whether that's driving, parking, public transport, however you like. If you want to Uber, sure. On top of that, you've got to take a day off your part-time job. You can't make any other money that day.
Or full-time.
Yeah, or full-time job, exactly. It's not only that you didn't get paid for that day for the work you did, you're also removing yourself from the opportunity to be paid from another job that you may be having. And you still have costs. You have to get to the session. You have to buy your lunch. Sometimes you might go for a drink after the session. How do you fund that if you're not making as much revenue on streams? It's like we said, I think it's a third, don't quote me. And a third of, you know, a third of the publishing. You know, that's we're already at 1/9 of this thing, and you still have all these upfront costs. It's just how do you do that without getting paid a day fee for these songs? And I think that, you know, while I don't actually agree that working on spec all the time is the greatest thing in the world, I think that it's a step in the right direction to be paying top liners, you know, for songs if they're getting cut. And if that means that the artist has to pay for it, sure. Or if it means it comes out of the producer's cut, I guess that's not for me to debate, but it's a way that I run it.
Yeah. But it's nice to hear that there's at least a conversation happening. There's an evolution, because it's seeing the value of songwriters. And as a songwriter, of course, I have a vested interest. Like, my feet are directly in the water with this show, with who I work with, what I do. But it's good to hear it spoken about, because it allows other people to make that choice for themselves.
100%. 100%. I was just going to say, I think that a lot of people are actually quite open to discussing these things. And I always this thing that, I mean, my parents told me was, don't talk about money, politics, or religion with people you don't really know. And I was like, well, why not? How do we make a change in any of those things if we don't talk about them? You know, otherwise we get stuck in this echo chamber. I mean, that can go really philosophical, but we're not going to go there. But just in terms of this, it's like, how do you know, oh, I should be paid for this session, or, oh, I should charge this much for my song to be produced? If you're a producer or even a songwriter, you go, well, I don't know how much songwriters get paid for a day, because I don't have to pay a songwriter to come and write for me. That's my job. It's like, well, if I'm a producer, I go, I don't know how much producers get paid, because I've never had to pay one. I am one, you know? And so these are all the conversations that I think, while some people might be uncomfortable with them, that they're important and that, you know, we need to have.
That's great. And that's what we talked about when we met with Tamika and Cam as well. And we all just, like you said, it wasn't a focused conversation about money. It was just a product of talking about the difficulties we're all facing. And, you know, all sort of the same age, the same kind of focus, same direction. We know each other through, very indirectly, through Ed Graves and Rainbow Wood and Yantina and all these wonderful people that hopefully you'll meet and see as well one day. Yeah. But it really is this sense of trying to create correct connections between people. That's that sense of relationship building as opposed to networking. Like, we hung out, got brought into the studio. I was like, okay, cool. What does this guy look like? How does it feel? And then we would feel comfortable like this. You extend an opportunity to someone else. But this is very, very selfless of you, because you're sharing what's been painful and expensive to learn with someone who can pick up this show day one. My dream is always that, and it's the next question, so get ready. This is warming you up. My dream is that someone that, like, 14, 15 years old, when you're playing your power chords, or I'm writing songs about the girl I never got when I'm 13 on my bed, they can pick up the show and they can just get the truth, hopefully, as it stands. So you've done an incredible job already, so I don't blame you if you don't have an answer for this. But what do you wish you knew about songwriting and the music industry when you started at 14? What do you wish you could have known at that age?
There's so much. I think that, you know what? Actually, I'm going to start here. I think if I was 14 and just for myself, and this is going to be a selfish little monologue.
Go for it.
I think that if I was looking at myself at 14, what would I say? I was like, you can do it. That's it. You can. And I think that if I had the emotional capacity at 14 to understand what this meant, I think that it was learning to be the person who you want to be by envisaging the person you'd like to be and living life how that person would live it. I think literally you can do it. It's like, if you want to do something, you will do something. And just obviously there's a lot of things, you know, we can go Gary V right now and be like, yeah, just, you know, student loans are hard, whatever. But like how just I'm articulating this so poorly for everyone who's listening.
No, you're not. It's just that Gary V bit. You should have followed it through.
Yeah. It's that understanding that despite what everyone says and the cliches, that if you really, really want to do something, I believe that most careers are equally as hard. If you want to spend 6 years studying law to be a lawyer and pass the bar or whatever it is, it's just as hard as going, I'm going to double down and invest in myself and have that entrepreneurial spirit. That's a great buzzword. To be a songwriter and invest in my craft and spend the time learning to be, you know, great at what I do and building relationships, which I want to come back to something you said about that before. But I think that that's the key, is that if you want something enough, you'll work out a way to do it. And you will learn the key. I think there are key personality traits for that type of person and key motivators that you'll be able to execute it properly.
Beautiful. Yeah, and it started with something simple and ended with something simple. But people that are looking for the reason behind that answer, you gave it as well. So give yourself more credit, I think, in terms of articulating ideas. And
that's a little, I gave myself a pat on the back.
Love it. Maybe you can hear that on the audio.
Yeah, maybe.
If you wanted to continue about... Yeah. You talked about relationships. I'd be interested because that's a big touch point for me. I want to impart for people. But what is your thought?
Yeah, I think you summed it up, actually, was when, you know, we caught up here with Cam and Tamika. It's like actually making quality relationships rather than quantity relationships, which sounds like such a cliche. But I think that the relationships that I've made from, you know, authentic relationships, my actual friends and people I actually genuinely got along with, have, apart from the fact that they're, you know, enriching and fulfilling and all of those great things, but the opportunities, even in work, that those people have provided far outweigh the, you know, passing relationships you make at networking events or things like that. And I think that if we really double down on investing in our friends and actually, you know, circulating opportunities, that we'd all be better off. Because it's my opinion that if an opportunity comes my way, I'm more likely to give it to a friend or someone that I'm really close with that I know is capable of, you know, taking this opportunity on board and working with it than someone who just said, I'm a producer at a networking event I went to, you know. And I think that having, you know, these deep conversations that we did really allows people to bond properly, and we can show some emotional depth. And I think it's different for everyone, but that's just what I've found in terms of the networking experience. And it's something that I mentioned before. It's like, it's not really a strong point going out and meeting lots of people, but I like to, you know, have people in the studio and talk about emotions and feelings and create, you know, an understanding of each other that way. And that's sort of how I like to work as well, because I feel we create deeper, meaningful connections with people and, you know, usually better songs and, you know, opportunities for us to work together more. I think that that's more important. So double down on your friends, guys.
Double down on your friends. And I'm glad you said it, because it's that practical aspect too, is that you talked about earlier, you talked about and highlighted it again, but just for people to understand it practically, is when you are able to go to an emotional depth with someone, that takes time, takes trust. It's a risk as well. It can be expensive when it's misplaced. But what that means is that you can ask someone, hey, would you mind just unpicking that lyric? Or would you mind just pushing that vocal? Because I feel like you're close to getting that idea to be able to talk about that sensory experience or that loss. That is hard. And even for us, like, you do size someone up as much as we're like, we're smiling over brunch and stuff. And I always joke with, like, either before people work with me or before I meet someone, it's like, by the way, I'm a sociopath. So you can't believe anything I'm saying. Right.
Yeah.
But it's like, that's that sentence is like, and you have to get that feeling from spending time with someone. And a quick one maybe for people I heard is like, don't spend any less than 4 or 5 hours before you start working with someone. I believe at the end of this interview, that'll be 5 hours.
Yeah, maybe. I think we'll hit our 5 hour mark.
Yeah.
But we said and this.
It's that weird thing because like...
Well, you and yeah. I said this. I mean, at the start of the show, you said that when we talked about it is that we can sit here and have a conversation and get to know each other, or we can sit here and try and write a song and not get to know each other and probably never write another song again. Whereas I know that you and I are going to get along and that creatively we can have these conversations and understand each other to a depth that we'll be able to, you know, connect emotionally, I suppose, and actually write something fantastic and probably write another one or another one. And it's just being, you know, having the understanding that that's more beneficial than going, let's just spend 4 hours and write half a song, you know?
Yeah, because that was an education for me. Yeah, it was like a painful one because I was like, it was in a way, it was painful. It's like, oh, okay, cool. I'm going to turn up. I'll try and interview these guys. I'll try and do everything. That's my, you know, lack of foresight. But then I get there and go like, actually, no, let me just sit and listen. Oh, I learned so much about, like, we call it painting the invisible shape. Like from your perspective, how you paint the shape allows me to see that as well. And like Cam and Tamika as well. And you intersect with these really, 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 really emotional points in people's lives. So all I could say to people is fuck networking and build relationships. That's what we've come to say on this show. Is there anything in particular that you feel like you wanted to share? Like you said, when I asked you about things you wish you knew, were there other points that really kind of popped up for you?
To be honest, and I think this is more a philosophical question, so I'm going to say no. And the reason is just because I think if I knew at 14 the sorts of things that I do now and how the industry works, I'm not 100% certain that I would come into it. I think that, and this is going to sound so kooky, but it's a love. We walk into a studio every day for something we love to do. And while you can fall in love with someone in a couple of weeks, do you really, really love them for who they are, fully understanding their flaws within that time? No. And you learn new things about people every single day and the relationships we invest in. And I think that creativity is exactly the same thing. I think that knowing its flaws, like we do, and everyone's creativity is different. I don't know if at first I would have continued to trust in this concept of what I like to do. I think, and I think that a lot of people might resonate with this, is like if you went on a first date with someone and then they listed all of the things that after 5 years you're going to get irritated by, you know, no one's perfect. I'm sure there are plenty of things that irritate my partner about me. On the first date, you probably wouldn't want to go on a second date with them, you know? But over time, you learn to love this person and learn all these fantastic things about them and creativity that you want to stick with it, despite the fact that there are these flaws in the business or anything. And I think that coming to terms with that is the decision that you make when you want to become a professional rather than a hobbyist, is that, okay, I love this so much, I cannot see myself doing anything else. What do I have to accept? What flaws do I have to accept? And what things do I have to, and maybe we did talk about this, is what things do I have to know that I'm going to suffer with and struggle with to continue a career with what I love? Because the things that make you fall in love with it are all the things that you like and enjoy, but the things that make you consistent and feed longevity as a creative in the creative industry are being able to go, I'm happy to struggle with the fact that maybe I'm not going to get paid on time every time. And maybe at some stages in the early parts of my career, I'm really going to struggle with money and have to work another job. But at some point, that's not going to happen. The flip side is, okay, well, you could, for me, was you could go and be an engineer and still study 4 years at university to do that and then rock up to work every day in a suit and work 9 to 5 and then get home and be completely exhausted and drained and depressed. But you know, not be worried about paying the bills and not being worried about getting paid on time, because payroll is going to sort that out. And if you have a problem, you can complain to them. These are the things that we choose to struggle with. I could choose, do I want to rock up to a job and just get paid that I don't like? Or do I think that I'm more of a person who really wants fulfillment out of something that I really enjoy and I just want to struggle with the other things because comparatively, it's not really a problem? So I think that, again, coming back to the question, which was, what would you say to someone at 14? Is like, yes, you can do it, but you need to be willing to make sacrifices and understand that over time, you're going to learn things that are you're going to struggle with. You're not going to have all the answers at first, and that you will get so far into it and so in love with your craft and what you do that it won't matter. You'll continue to do it. That's why I would say no. I would just allow you to go on the journey.
Incredible. Practical and articulate again, and touching on philosophy. I think philosophy is just facts of life. So I don't think it's woo-woo. I don't think it's detached from anything we actually do day to day. And I want to add to that as well, really well said about what we feel like we have to accept. And I'm sitting here learning at 28 from what you're speaking about and reflecting on my choices, what I'm doing here, you know, talking to you and going out to the side of the world and seeing that. I think, okay, I've gained a lot there. Huge amount, but right now it's quite hard to process, or it's like, okay, where does that go? Which box does that go in? And another one is being so incredibly open, me particularly, like that manic energy to get things done and be somewhere, do something, that leaves you pretty wide open for the lower times. Like currently, you know, back in winter, back in, okay, let's get this going, let's get this started. You're like, wow, this is heavy. But as you said, you might have that in different careers. So yeah, beautifully articulated. And I think you've smashed it. Thank you for coming on and sharing so much. And is there anything that you wanted to add on and to talk about before we finish?
Is there something that you think might be useful? I mean, we caught up for a couple hours.
I think you've done a great job. Yeah, we did, because we had like 4 hours. I'm trying to think, this is the bit where I go, okay, I've benefited so much and I have these notes, but at the same time, I think what you've done is cover so much that I think it's a beautiful way to end this one. And like you said, the door is open for round two. We've had some round twos come back, but yeah, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for coming on, sharing. Thank you for taking time out of your day, the end of your
Absolutely.
Day.
Absolutely. Anytime.
I really feel like this is going to help people as they pick it up through their journey. And, I'll be speaking to you, hopefully writing with you soon. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for everyone for listening to me speak. hopefully there was some knowledge in there, and I hope that you can take away and add it to your understanding of your life somehow. Thanks for having me, Jamie.
And we'll be putting James's Instagram at the bottom, and we'll be able to put your website there as well, so people can reach out, say hello.
Like, follow, and subscribe. Thanks, guys.
Like, follow, subscribe. Hello there, sweet listener. Thank you for listening to today's show. And I just wanted to say, we do have an Instagram. I know that some of you guys are quite interested in just sending those private emails, and I promise you they are absolute gold dust to me. And I love receiving those emails when people get time to send them with their songs, with their questions. And mainly, I love your stories about how you're listening to the show, where you found it, what it means to you. Those are the things I'll probably take to my grave, to be completely honest. But if you want to be out there on social media, please get in touch. I wish I knew that pod on Instagram. We're going to be getting stuff up on YouTube as well. Reach out, send me a DM, send me a voice note, send me a video. I want to see you guys. I want to see your shows. I want to hear your songs. Thank you again for listening to the show. If you want to be involved and get full value for your creative process, please do so. But if you're one of those wonderful people that just likes to sit and observe. I know you're out there, and thank you so much for your attention. It really does mean a lot. So no need to get in touch, but if you feel like you want to be involved, please do so. Much love and bye-bye.